since their last visit. They renovated Society Hill, the Chestnut Street Transitway, Penn Center, the Galleries 1 and 2, Penn's Landing. Didn't exist at the time they were last in Philadelphia. The city has changed a lot, and there's new controversial proposed changes, including a convention center planned for just north of Reading Terminal and a symphony hall that's been suggested for Broad Street. With me are Barbara Kaplan and Ed Bacon, the current and former executive directors of the Philadelphia Planning Commission, to discuss the current state of the city and development plans for the future. The City Planning Commission is responsible for guiding the orderly growth and development of the city. Ed Bacon is the city planner who, more than any other one person, is responsible for the changes in Philadelphia's center city since the 1950s. As the executive director of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission from 1949 to 1970, he was the guiding force behind the plans for creating Penn Center, Penn's Landing, and the development of Society Hill and Market Street East. He's also the author of the book Design of Cities, which has influenced the thinking of many architects and designers. Barbara Kaplan has been the acting executive director of the Planning Commission since last July. She's been with the Planning Commission for 8.5 years, serving as senior housing planner, chief of comprehensive planning, and deputy executive director. She's also worked at planning agencies in Dallas-Fort Worth, San Diego, and Los Angeles. We'll be opening up the telephones for your questions and comments a little bit later. I want to welcome you both to Fresh Air. Ed Bacon, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Let's just start briefly with a look back. Ed Bacon, how would you say the city now compares to the city you had envisioned in the 1950s when you were first the head of the Planning Commission in Philadelphia?
Well, I'd like to go back to 1947 to the Better Philadelphia Exhibition, because at that time we made a very clear statement about the city as it would be 30 years in the future in a very comprehensive way. And the reality that is now on the ground is much more radical than we were able to visualize in 47. Many more things have happened. The transformation is much more complete than we were able to anticipate.
What, like?
Well, the whole development of the commuter rail tunnel, which is a tremendous advance in the whole transportation system to Center City, the whole concept of Market East, Gallery 1 and Gallery 2, was barely adumbrated at that time. And other things, we anticipated the ideas that, for example, in residential areas we would give up the ideas of garages in the back, which at that time was a totally radical idea. Everybody had garages in the back of row houses, which meant the kids had no place to play, and the backyards were concrete deserts. That idea has grabbed hold in the meantime and has become general practice, I think. And we really were the initiators, I think, in many ways, of the idea of infill, which is now very popular. We showed the way a South Philadelphia neighborhood rehabilitated, in which the existing houses were preserved, and the vacant lots and the particularly unfortunate uses like junkyards and so forth were torn down, and houses were fitted in to the old neighborhood so that the old structure was strengthened, and then where necessary, open spaces were created for little parks and playgrounds and so on. So it's been a very exciting experience, but it is interesting to see that the vision we were able to perpetrate then, it was certainly very influential, and it had a tremendous effect on the city development, but the things that actually happened were beyond what we'd anticipated.
Barbara Kaplan, is there anything like a 30-year plan that you project into the future now at the Planning Commission?
No, there really isn't a 30-year plan. I think what we've been doing is taking a look at the 1960 Comprehensive Plan, understanding what influence it has had over the past 20-plus years on the city's development, and trying to take off from there. I think that the 1960 Comprehensive Plan was what we now would call an end state plan, in the sense that it focused on the vision of the future as people imagined it to be or as they wanted it to be, and it didn't talk so much about how you were going to get there. I think the emphasis in planning now is much more on how you're going to get to the future, not to be so specifically focused on what it might look like. And I also think that local government has changed in terms of what people expect of it tremendously over the last 20 years. And as a result, the Planning Commission and the planning profession in general has also evolved in terms of the kinds of things that planners have to take into account. There are a lot of things that we spend a tremendous amount of time on at the Planning Commission today that were not taken into account in the 1960 Comprehensive Plan. For example, I think the major emphasis now that runs through an awful lot of what we do at the Planning Commission, an awful lot of what the city administration is concerned about is economic development, whether that means tax ratables, whether it means jobs, whether it means trying to revitalize neighborhood commercial strips, trying to entice investment of all kinds to Philadelphia. This is a very major area of activity. And in the 1960 Comprehensive Plan, there was focused on setting aside tracts of land for industrial development or for commercial use, but there wasn't so much emphasis on how you were going to get the industry to go certain places or what incentives you were going to use to attract it or who was going to be employed by what type of industry. So that's one example. I think the area of social planning and policy planning, this is a whole other area, I think, that we spend much more time on today than was true 20 years ago. And I think what we're doing now is not one plan for the city, but many plans for the city that we will then begin to knit together. And in fact, over the last 5 years, we have done a significant number of plans for different areas of the city, both neighborhoods and larger districts. And we've also done plans on many different subjects. And I think the challenge now is to begin to knit them together to be able to speak coherently about the city as a whole.
Are there lessons that you think there are to be learned from the way that the development that we've seen here in the past 20 or 30 years has happened?
Yes, I think we've learned a tremendous amount about how development takes place, what is involved in the development process, what, from a public policy point of view, we can do sometimes to try to influence development, to get it to move faster, to get it to go where we want it rather than where it might want to go of its own volition. And not to say that it's easy. I don't think the development process is a straight line kind of process. It's a very complex, complicated process that doesn't move ahead from beginning to end without any hitches and without a lot of interventions at many points. And I think that we certainly have been given by the planning that was done by Mr. Bacon and the staff that they had in the 50s and the 60s a tremendous legacy to build on. I think that a lot of the physical visions for the city that were developed in the 50s and 60s we are still involved in trying to implement. I think the images that were created back in the 50s for, particularly I think for Penn's Landing and for the Market Street East area and for Society Hill, I think are very powerful images. And even if those images were not able to be fully realized within a certain period of time, I don't think that's what was important. I think it was the power of those images and the inspiration they have provided for those of us that have come along since that has been very important in shaping the kind of planning that we do day to day.
Before we open up the telephones, I want to talk about a few of the plan changes for the near future. And let's start with the proposed convention center, since that seems to be currently the most controversial project on the books, and it's planned for just north of the Reading Terminal. Do you both support that plan, Barbara Kaplan?
Yes, I do.
Ed Bacon, you support the plan?
Well, it would be unthinkable not to carry it through. It's one of the most extraordinary and remarkable opportunities the city has, and it will be the most remarkable convention center in the United States and perhaps in the world. When you think of what the visitors will really have and the kind of city we'll present to the visitors that arrive there, right across the street is probably the most beautiful department store in the world. It's certainly in the United States, Wanamaker's. And only flowing out of the convention center through the marvelous restored Reading Terminal and then through the gallery, which is the great affirmation in the United States of a meeting place for people from all parts of the city, where the inner city black people and the blue-collar people from New Jersey and then the upper-income people from the main line can all come together and realize that they're part of a diverse society, which we are. And then through that unprecedented and unmatched way to move on the Great People Street, with the sun coming in through the glass at the top directly to the Liberty Bell one block away and Independence Hall two blocks away, that the whole thing fits together to give an experience which is absolutely unmatched. And it's simply marvelous to see the continuing support for this idea and the way in which it will move forward despite all the obstacles. And, of course, all the obstacles about dislocation and suits and all the rest of it, they are very familiar to me. And every single thing that happened in Philadelphia, which Barbara Kaplan is speaking about as being important, and, by the way, also for ratables and jobs as well, met all that kind of obstacle, and people always said they shouldn't be done for exactly the same reason. So I think it's just a wonderful opportunity.
Why is a convention center important to the health of the center city of Philadelphia?
Well, the convention industry is a growth industry. That has been true for the last 10 years, and from all the projections that we have been able to find out about, it will continue to do so. It's also one way that you can get people from outside the city to come in and spend money here and to increase our capacity to produce revenue. This is very important because we have only so many people in Philadelphia, and a considerable portion of those people do not pay significant amounts of taxes. One quarter of all the households, for example, in the city are headed by somebody over 65. These are generally people on limited income with limited earning capacity. In addition, one out of five households is a female-headed household, and female-headed households have less than half the median income of other households. So that we can't keep on squeezing the people who live here and the industries that produce here to continue to support all the services that we need to provide in the city. So the convention industry is one way to attract money from outside to enrich our coffers in the city. The convention center that we presently have is a good facility. It's really a very good facility, but it's really not located in the best possible place to be competitive with the facilities that other cities are developing at this time. All of the other major convention cities are developing or are planning to develop new facilities. If we do not develop a similar new facility, our competitive position will be severely damaged in the next few years. And we think this is very important. People think that we just dreamed this idea up about a convention center in the last 6 months. That's really not true. About more than 2 years ago, we began to look at this question. We hired consultants to help us to take a look at Philadelphia's position vis-a-vis other cities. And we became convinced that modifying the existing convention center where it was would just not be adequate to keep our competitive position, because it wasn't necessarily the facility itself, but it was the location of the facility in an area where there were not very many hotel rooms within walking distance, where new hotels would probably not be enticed to go since the hotels that exist there already were not doing terrifically well, and that the best location would be a facility that was in town, downtown, and close to the existing hotel rooms, and that could attract the development of additional hotel rooms. Even the hotel number of hotel rooms that we have downtown now are not really adequate to hold people from the larger convention. Sometimes when a large convention comes to town, people wind up being in hotel rooms as far away as King of Prussia and Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And if you look at statistics from other cities sometimes have 4,000 hotel rooms within, you know, a 5 or 6 block walk of their convention center. And this is a very significant fact.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Barbara Kaplan, the current executive director of the Philadelphia Planning Commission, and Ed Bacon, who was the director of the Philadelphia Planning Commission from 1949 to 1970. Well, that brings us back to the issue that you just raised, Ed Bacon, which is in order to build a center, you have to tear down what is already there. And in the proposed site that we're talking about, that means that Chinatown really gets the brunt of the demolition. And what's interesting about that is that it is such a kind of self-contained, intact, organic community that would be completely dislocated through the location of the convention center there. You're nodding your head.
That's
I'm afraid, we want to correct that completely because, to the contrary, I believe there's virtually no demolition in Chinatown at all.
Very little.
Chinatown stands to benefit incredibly from this. I think it will be a wonderful thing for Chinatown because the whole number of people that will appreciate it will increase tremendously. And I think that the whole thing has been very sensitively planned to do really not damage, but to a Chinatown. Isn't that correct, Barbara?
Yes, I'm sure that the planning in that respect is certainly not completed, but we've had a number of meetings with representatives of the Chinese community. And the convention center really goes from 11th to 13th Street. And if it ever expands, it would expand west of 13th Street, not east. And that was very carefully done because of Chinatown. It was planned that way. And 11th Street is actually the western boundary of the Chinatown urban renewal area. And there are some properties that will be taken on 11th Street. And in fact, there are probably 23 residents that will be uprooted. A number of those will probably be Chinese families. But that it really does not disrupt the heart of Chinatown. And that was very carefully done. And one of the other things that we're concerned about is the walls of the convention center itself, the main box of the convention center, which really will set in behind the Reading Terminal and go from 11th to 13th Street and from Arch Street to Race Street. And we don't want to just plunk down a big box. We want to make sure, particularly the 11th Street side and the 13th Street side, have retail commercial on the ground floor so that it relates to what's across the street, so that the 11th Street side relates to the beginning of Chinatown, which is on the east side of 11th Street. We've discussed that quite extensively with the Chinese community. They have even suggested that there might be a way to also incorporate residential uses into the side of the convention center. We're not so sure whether that would be feasible, but we are exploring that with the architect that has started to do the design for the convention center.
And I wanted to add one more thing, that right in the gallery this minute, there's a great deal about Chinatown. There's signs up, direction to Chinatown, and so forth. It's already made people even more aware of it, I think, than they were before.
You have experience, as you pointed out, with having to change what already exists in the neighborhood in order to create something different. What advice would you give to the Planning Commission now about how to handle the uprooting that would have to occur if the convention center is built on the site we're discussing?
Oh, I don't give any advice to the Planning Commission. I think they're handling everything very competently.
What do you think you've learned from the way it was handled in the past in Philadelphia, Barbara Calvin?
Well, I think it's a very different world now from the world in which Society Hill was undertaken. For one thing, I think there's a greater grassroots community consciousness about issues like relocation. But also there's greater assistance to the city and greater recognition of the importance of relocation with the kind of federal and state funds that we can begin to think about to use for relocation purposes. That's not to say it's going to be easy, but by now we've done it a great many times. And contrary to what most people believe, there are very specific relocation benefits provided in both state and federal law. And if we have budgeted a certain amount of money for relocation, which we have roughly estimated, acquisition and relocation, which has roughly been estimated about $40 million, and if when we actually go out and have the right to conduct interviews and do appraisals, that amount of money is found to be greater because of the benefits that people are entitled to by law, we will have to find the money to give them those benefits. In addition to that, because this is such a major project, and we certainly do not want to build a convention center, as it were, on the backs of people who were forced to be disadvantaged and dislocated as a result of this effort, we will probably be offering certain services and certain benefits over and above what we are required to provide by law. And we're thinking about a variety of programs, some of which already exist through the Philadelphia Industrial Development Corporation, which provide various kinds of assistance to businesses. This would be specially targeted use of those programs, probably increasing the amount of money that we generally have available on a yearly basis so that we can provide special efforts for these businesses.
You're just joining us and speaking with Barbara Kaplan, the current executive director of the Philadelphia Planning Commission, and Ed Bacon, who was the director from 1949 through 70. We'll be opening up the phones for your questions about the state of Philadelphia and planning for the future in just a few minutes. Let's look at the proposed Symphony Hall now. Do you both support that?
Well, certainly I think it's a great idea as far as I can see.
In the location on South Broad Street?
Yes, I don't know precisely what location is currently being considered, but I think it's a great location for it, and I think it's wonderful to reinforce the things that are already there, because we have a very, very fine start there to begin with. And I think the sense of the health and balance of the whole city, that's a place which needs attention, and it's just the right thing for it.
Barbara Kaplan, what's the stand of the Planning Commission on a Symphony Hall?
Well, the Planning Commission officially hasn't seen it yet. In fact, we have a brand-new Planning Commission that has just come into being with the start of the new administration because they're appointed by the mayor. But the staff has been working with interested people from the Old Philadelphia Development Corporation and others from the arts community who are interested in promoting this project. And right now they're looking at South Broad Street on a site south of Spruce Street all the way to 15th Street. And they're trying to It's a very complicated project because they are trying to satisfy the interests not only of the symphony, but they're also trying to incorporate interests of the Philadelphia College of Art and some other property owners in the area who may be interested in developing housing on the same block. And there has been a lot of thinking done about how to put these various elements together in one package. And we have, as a staff, have been very supportive of their efforts and tried to point out some of the concerns we have about how to drop in, again, a very major project, doing minimum violence to the surrounding fabric of the city. I think that's one of the things that Philadelphia has been able to achieve very well and that I think we have to maintain vigilance to continue to achieve. We've managed to develop some very major kinds of facilities and manage to tuck them in to the existing fabric of the city with minimal disruption. A lot of other cities chose sites, for example, for a convention center, where they kind of went out and found an empty piece of land on the edge of town and put the convention center down, totally unrelated to the existing fabric of the city and the existing pedestrian and shopping and congregating movements that a city has. And I think it's difficult to do what we're trying to do, but I think that we will have a much richer city and a richer urban experience to offer people if we manage to succeed in doing that.
Ed Bacon, you said you support the construction of a new symphony center. What's wrong with the Academy of Music? Why do we need an additional
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Academy of Music. It's a marvelous place for its own purposes, but we need more facilities because it's overused, and we need, I believe, a different acoustical situation for the recording of the Philadelphia Orchestra, which is a very important thing for the city.
Okay, let's look at the subject of Fairmount Park, and then we'll open up the phones. I've been reading in the newspaper that there's some problems with the park, that it hasn't, especially certain areas, haven't been kept up the way they should. Ed Bacon, maybe first you can address the importance of the park to Philadelphia, and Barbara, you can tell us what the current plans are for shaping up the park.
Well, Barbara, why don't you, of course, obviously the park's very important for Philadelphia, and why doesn't Barbara tell us something about the plans, and then I'd like to follow up with a little comment.
Okay, there's just been released, I believe, within the last month, a new master plan for Fairmount Park, and unlike the kind of master plan that tells us really what the park should be like in the future, I think what we're more concerned with in this plan is how to bring the park back almost to its former glory and to put it in the kind of shape that it really should be in order for everybody to get the maximum benefit out of it and for it to become the kind of facility that everybody can really be proud of. I think one of the major problem with Fairmount Park is really money. I think that you have to recognize what's happened in the city. The city lost about 13% of its population from 1970 to 1980. As I mentioned before, a lot of the people that are in the city don't have the kind of revenue-generating capacity that we really need to keep up with everything that we have to pay for. And in fact, the 1960 Comprehensive Plan projected a population that would be 800,000 more in 1980 than what we actually turned out to be. And 800,000 is a lot of people. It's bigger than San Francisco, bigger than Boston, about the size of San Diego. And we built built more facilities, more public facilities than was recommended in the 1960 plan. And we have them all, and they're here for us to enjoy. But they were for a city that was 800,000 larger, and we have, you know, fewer people to be here and pay for them. And I think that's, you know, kind of the problem of Fairmount Park. It's a problem of, you know, many of our other facilities. It's a problem of the art museum. It's a problem of many neighborhood recreation centers all over the city. And I think the master plan talks about all of the kinds of things that really should be done, everything from, you know, refurbishing some of the buildings in the park to reinstituting the policy of a park ranger system so that there's better surveillance and better maintenance of facilities as problems occur. Erosion control, I mean, I think that's a very serious problem. This is a heavily used urban park in many sections, and you will get problems of erosion control and flooding. And these kinds of problems have to be dealt with. I think it's tremendously important that this kind of a plan was done. It's not a glamorous kind of plan, but I think it's extremely necessary, and I think it's now a great challenge to the city to figure out ways to try to fund, you know, all of the very fine recommendations that are in this plan.
Well, as a person who bicycles practically every day up East River Drive and then up the Wissahickon to Hidden Drive, or Forbidden Drive, rather, and then out to Valley Green, I just want to remind us all that it is certainly one of the most magnificent parks in the world, and to see the number of people out there enjoying it is just a great thrill. And I think one of the things wrong with the park is the way we've used the edges of it, that it's wonderful to live next to, and in many of the edges we've allowed the properties to deteriorate. And that's why I'm so very happy about the work which James Brown and his Parkside Development Corporation is doing in the part of the park, Parkside on Parkside Avenue, which is opposite to Memorial Hall on the site of the Centennial Exposition. And he is a minority developer, and he's working in his neighborhood where he lives, and he is taking these formerly very deteriorated Victorian houses and apartment houses, and he's rehabilitating them for essentially the people who are there now. And this is, I think, the beginning of another very important aspect. And needless to say, there are many other areas which face on the park where this is very much needed, and I hope very much that he is pointing the way, which will become true around pretty much all of the park, and that the city will give him and others full support in that effort.
Well, I'd like to open up the phones now and invite our listeners to call with their questions and comments about Philadelphia's environment the way it is now, plans for the future. My guests are the current and former executive directors of the Philadelphia Planning Commission. The current director is Barbara Kaplan. Also with me is Ed Bacon, who was the director from 1949 through 1970. The number for your questions is 923-2774. Our area code is 215. The number again, 923-2774. And before we get to the first phone call, Barbara, are there other plans in the works for Philadelphia that would dramatically change the shape of the city that we should know about?
Well, I think one of the plans that we have gotten underway recently is a new plan for Center City, Philadelphia. The last plan for Center City, I think, was adopted in 1963. So it's been more than 20 years, and I think that a lot of what was recommended in 1963 has come to pass, or that which has not come to pass we are working on, or we have discarded as, you know, not a workable idea. And so I think right now we are taking stock and beginning to think about what we would like to focus on for Center City in the future.
Okay, so that's still in
the works. That's one plan. We're also involved in plans for many neighborhoods in the city. we're involved in a major new effort in North Philadelphia to try to look at, you know, what has happened in North Philadelphia in the last 10 or 15 years. There was a tremendous effort made in the Model Cities program, and we really want to take a look at what has happened since and what are the best places in North Philadelphia to make strategic investments, both public and private. There's a perception that North Philadelphia is all the same. That's really not true. There are many, many neighborhoods and many different areas with many different kinds of strengths that we feel we can build on if we identify those areas strategically.
Okay, let's take our first phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to bring up a couple of things, and then I'll hang up and let your guest comment on them. I moved here about a year and a half ago from Los Angeles. It's kind of funny. Although I was born here, people find out that I moved here from Los Angeles, and they say, "What are you doing here?" I always get that reaction. What I'm doing here is I'm going to school up at the Temple Health Sciences campus, and every time I go up there in the morning from Girard Avenue, I see what appear to be large areas of unused or underutilized space that seem to be located right all along or near major transportation corridors that could fire people straight down into Center City. And maybe I'm naive, but is there any way, could there be some way perhaps of getting these areas to serve as major satellites in the rejuvenation or redevelopment of Philadelphia as a whole and Center City in particular? That was my first comment. And the second thing is that since living here, I've noticed a really fascinating difference in the attitude toward tourism between Philadelphia and Los Angeles. People here seem to say, come here for conventions and so on like that. You'll stay in some glorious luxury hotels downtown. And while you're here, you might want to stroll out and take a look at some very interesting things we have here in Philadelphia. Whereas in Los Angeles, the attitude has always seemed to be to me, come and see L.A. It's L.A. itself that's the attraction. And Los Angeles is sprinkled with a large number of small, relatively inexpensive motels for ordinary people to come and stay. When my in-laws came to see us last year, we had a heck of a time finding them a place in or near Center City to stay. The only place we found that was affordable was the Franklin Motor Inn, which at the moment doesn't exist anymore. There seems to be a very strong emphasis on luxury hotel accommodations, and they're all concentrated in one space. So I'll hang up now and let your guests comment on that.
Thanks for those questions.
Barbara, don't you think this is yours?
Well, since I moved here from Los Angeles, San Diego, and Dallas, I people said the same thing to me. I think about the parcels of vacant land in North Philadelphia, I think this is one of the things that we're very interested in looking at as we begin to look for strategic opportunities for investment in North Philadelphia. Temple University itself, with a new president, Peter Liacouras, is also, I think, leading this charge. I think he feels that people have the wrong perception about North Philadelphia and that there's a lot that can be done to change that perception and to encourage new investment in North Philadelphia. I think that if we begin to understand some of the strengths that are present in different areas of North Philadelphia, we will have a better sense of what incentives or what we have to do from a public policy point of view to try to stimulate that kind of investment and that kind of better utilization of the land. And the question of hotels, I really agree with you. I think I spent my first night here at the Franklin Motor Inn, so I can sympathize with you. Happily, though, the Franklin Motor Inn has been bought by a chain called Econolodge and is being totally renovated and is expected to open, I guess, by the summer. For just the purpose that you indicate, it will be for families to come and at a reasonable price stay in an accommodation that is within reasonable proximity of the Center City. Unfortunately, we've had other hotels and motels locate in the outlying areas within the city boundaries, and their history has not been a good one. A number of them have failed. One of the Holiday Inns that I can recall way up on Roosevelt Boulevard in a more suburban setting and where they could offer more reasonable prices went bankrupt and now has become housing for the elderly. Apparently, we have not attracted tourists here in sufficient numbers to be able to create enough of a market to stimulate the development and the success of these kinds of hotels. I think it becomes a chicken and egg problem sometimes. We don't have them, so we don't get them, and the problem perpetuates itself. But I think we're very aware of that, and we're going to try to see if we can do something about that.
Do you think Philadelphia markets itself well to potential tourists?
Well, I think it could do better. I really can't claim any particular expertise in exactly what they're doing now, but there are vast numbers of people who come here, and they're very, very pleased with what they find. And I do think there's kind of a friendly warmth, and I think there are developments such as Philadelphia Hospitality, which is doing a great job of making it a more personal thing to come here and so on. And
yeah.
Goodness knows we have wonderful things to come here for.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just curious about the gallery, too. First of all, I haven't been there yet, but I saw the Ag when it opened. And it looked like most of the stores that are in it are the same franchise-type stores which are in the Gallery 1. First of all, why are there duplications? And secondly, why are so many of them franchises rather than private businesses?
Well, I think that the whole thing is a developing thing, and I do suggest that you go look at it. I think that if you look at it, you will find it is a pretty exciting place. Its full potential won't be realized until the commuter tunnel is opened, and Barbara can tell us when that's going to be. There simply is so much demand there that the stores in general are needed. And I do think that as the connections with the business center and the great office buildings and so forth downtown are strengthened, which they are going to be, that the mix of people in the gallery will become of a broader range, and that a lot of the people from Center City will be attracted there. And this, in turn, will mean, I think, that there will be some changes in the nature of the stores, and I think it will be in the positive direction, more or less as you've indicated it should be.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Barbara, do you want to pick up from there about when you expect the commuter tunnel to be open? Now, I heard about a six-month delay.
The latest date I have been told is around Labor Day, which is about a two-month delay from the date that we originally had. It's too soon to know now whether that date will hold, but we're hoping that it will.
Okay, let's take another call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. There's no question that Center City has improved tremendously in the last 20 years. But in that time, a neighborhood like Germantown, of great historical importance and charm, has deteriorated tremendously. One time I could do all my shopping there. Now I never set foot because of its general lack of decent stores, its ugliness, lack of parking. Does the Planning Commission have any ideas of what can be done in the near future, specific ideas to restore Germantown?
Well, there was a plan done, I guess it's about 4 or 5 years ago, by the American City Corporation, taking a look at Germantown, particularly with an eye to the very concerns that you express. And in fact, they found that there really was a very good market in terms of buying potential in the area that surrounds Germantown, Mount Airy, East Falls. And they came up with a number of recommendations, some of which didn't seem to be that feasible, but others of which the city really has been working on through the Commerce Department and through the Philadelphia Citywide Development Corporation. It is probably not happening as fast as we would like it to happen, but I think we've been hit with a very bad investment climate with very high interest rates and uncertainty in the economy the last 2 or 3 years, which we're hoping has turned around now and will provide us with people who are willing to take a risk and make some investments in Germantown. We have been disposing of, though the city has been actually selling some properties that have been owned for years by the Redevelopment Authority in and around the Central Germantown Shopping District. And I think when some of these renovations are completed and the retail space that will accompany these renovations is in operation, I think you're going to begin to see the beginnings of some real improvement in Central Germantown. I think this is something that's certainly not escaped the notice of the Planning Commission or the city government. I think it happens to be, though, a very difficult problem to deal with.
Just a little historical note, 25 or 30 years ago, we started working with Germantown merchants to do a plan very similar to Center City, and the merchants absolutely threw us out. They would not cooperate in any way with the city.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Bacon.
Yes.
I've often thought that putting the expressway through Fairmount Park is one of the worst disasters that has ever happened to Philadelphia. And I remember reading that Mayor Clark regarded that as one of his worst decisions. I wondered why, at the time, they didn't consider putting that somewhere else, especially with all that vacant railroad ground out there.
Well, I think you would find that the railroad ground doesn't work. And when you come to somewhere else, if you mean going through a neighborhood, I think you can imagine what that would have meant.
Mm-hmm.
I just simply don't agree with you about the expressway through Fairmount Park. I think that it's been worked in very successfully with the park and that it does a minimum of damage and that it's a very useful and valuable piece of Philadelphia's equipment.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that wherever you go in Fairmount Park, you can hear the expressway traffic and smell the exhaust gas.
Well, I think there are a few parts that you haven't been to then.
Well, I'm not talking, of course, about the Wissahickon Park. But then I think they repeated the mistake when they put the Delaware Expressway in where it is, cutting off the historical part of the city from the waterfront.
Well, there's a wonderful thing about expressways that wherever you put them, it's bound to be true that people aren't going to like that particular location.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air. Go
Hello,
ahead.
Is it Doug?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, okay. There have been many sparkling and beautiful new developments in town, that's true. But the developments are all massive ones. And when one gets out of the subway at City Hall and walks down Market Street, unless you go run into Wanamaker's, one sees, smells, and hears a blight of ugliness. The small stores are very unattractive. There are junk stores with noise blaring out. Now, I know this noise is illegal. I know through the years, occasionally, a store is fined, but it isn't enforced. And especially if I have a guest, I go into town rarely now because I'm less mobile. But the last I was in, this was still true, if one has a guest, I'm literally ashamed of the, it's the north side of Market Street. Before one gets to any of the new developments, the fascinating Reading Terminal Market. And
let's have our guests address this question that you've raised.
Well, I think you're talking about the 1200 and the 1300 block of Market Street, which are, you know, the two blocks between Reading Terminal and City Hall. And I think that I would agree with you. One of those blocks would be changed completely. The character of it would be changed dramatically because that is where we have proposed a 1,200-room hotel that would be the accompanying or accessory use to the new convention center. And I think that would certainly make a dramatic improvement to Market Street. And I feel that the 1300 block, while nothing is specifically planned there, that the property values will rise and the opportunity for economic gain will be enhanced so greatly by the development of the convention center and the 1,200-room hotel that it will no longer seem to be profitable to maintain the current uses, and we will have some much better development materialize on that block in the future. I also would like to talk about Chestnut Street and Walnut Street. I think I agree with you that the blaring noise is illegal. Some of the signs are illegal as well. That we have the city adopted an ordinance in 1981 to try to control some of the signage and some of the appearance of the stores on Chestnut Street and Walnut Street. This year, that was extended also to South Broad, and we also put greater controls in there on the kinds of uses that can go into those stores. So I hope that over time, the influence of these ordinances will try to improve the climate of the retail shopping environment downtown.
Anything you want to add, Ed Bacon?
No, I think it's very well covered. Thank you.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Our number is 923-2774, and my guests are Ed Bacon, who was the planning commissioner, the head of the Planning Commission in Philadelphia from 1949 to 1970, and Barbara Kaplan, who's the current executive director of the Philadelphia Planning Commission. Our number, 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, Terry. I'm calling to ask if one of your guests could explain to me the great asset of the tunnel, which hasn't opened. The transit system that I use is usually late, and the equipment is falling apart, and it seems to me that the city ought to spend more money on it, and the tunnel is a puzzle to me. And could they explain why it's such an advantage?
Well, I will take on the basic reason that it was conceived in the first place and what I think to be the basic advantage of it to be in the long run, that with the two entirely separate systems, the Pennsylvania Railroad and the Reading Railroad, coming into a dead end and then deadheading back, meant that you could get only a 50% capacity use of the rails. And the use of the commuter lines had really arrived at their capacity, and the only way to increase it, which it must be done as we look forward to the future and realize that petroleum is not going to be available the way it has been in the past, was to join them together. And this makes a much more efficient and more economical way to run the two systems by combining them into one. The cost of turning a train around at the center is very great, and that is, of course, cut in half by the fact that they only turn around at the outer edges of the both systems. And I am sure that as the reality of the drying up of petroleum finally begins to dawn on this country, that those cities who have not made provision for electrically driven transportation lines will look to Philadelphia with an acute envy for the fact that our tunnel exists and that we have, in fact, one of the finest transportation systems of any city in the United States of electrically driven vehicles.
Oh, thank you. I just hope that there will still be people taking the trains because the systems are not working very well now. And how can you encourage them to use the trains if they can't count on being at work on time or getting home on time? I'm often held up for an hour or two on my way home. Do you think that'll be helped by the tunnel?
I think that it will be helped. People will simply have to ride trains when they can't use their cars the way they've been. And I think, by all means, that the whole question of obsolete equipment and so forth will be more effectively handled. But on the other hand, we've made marvelous strides in general with the Philadelphia transportation system in recent years. And the new subway surface cars and many of the new cars on the Broad Street subway and the rehabilitation of the Broad Street subway stations are spectacular. And I think that despite your discouraging account that if you put all the factors into the balance that we've improved our mass transportation incredibly over the last few years and that we're well on our way to really carrying it to the point where you want it to be.
Thanks a lot for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air and you're on the air and we're running out of time, so please try to keep it brief.
Okay. I'm a resident of the what's called the Southwest Center City area of Philadelphia, and I was wondering if there are any plans for the residential development of this area, and whether you had any insight into how the competing needs of the institutions in that area, such as the Graduate Hospital, and the neighborhood needs might be reconciled.
Yeah, I think we're well aware of the concerns of the people that live in that area. We're also well aware Graduate Hospital has proposed a garage in the 1700 block of South Street, and we're concerned that we want to accommodate the natural needs of the hospital to provide parking for the people that work there, but we also realize that need must be balanced against the very legitimate concerns of the people who live in the SWCC neighborhood, and we are working with both sides to try to accommodate that. In addition, I think there's some other things that are going on in that neighborhood that are very exciting. There is going to be the development of the Naval Home site with 325 new units and about 60 renovated apartment units using the existing buildings. And I think there's a plan that's going to enable the preservation of the most significant of the historic buildings, the major buildings, as well as the significant environmental features of the site and most of the trees. In addition to that, we're also involved in renovating through the use of a neighborhood group a significant number of vacant houses in the neighborhood for use of the residents that live there and that want to continue to live there. I think it's very important that we continue to reserve or preserve a certain number of places in neighborhoods for the people that live there and want to continue to live there as reinvestment takes place in these areas.
Thanks a lot for your call. Well, we're about out of time. I know, speaking for myself, the thing that really worries me is how am I going to get to work in, is it 1985, when the Vine Street Expressway is under construction and the Schuylkill has a couple of exit ramps closed, and who knows what will be happening with SEPTA? They have such financial troubles, we're not even insured of their continued existence. Is this under the guidance of the Philadelphia Planning Commission that all this construction is going to be happening simultaneously? I think one of the bridges is going to have construction on it, too.
This is not something that is really been the direct responsibility of the Planning Commission, although we're certainly aware of this, and we've tried to do whatever we could to make the different transportation agencies that are in charge of this aware of the impact of what they're doing. We're very concerned about this, and I think that certainly people are going to be inconvenienced. I don't think we should pretend that's not going to be the case. But I think that a lot of this disruption is necessary, because I think we've just about come to the end of the useful life of some of these bridges and expressways, and that we really have no choice but to get down to the business of renovating them before it's too late.
Okay, well, we're about out of time. There's a couple of seconds if either of you would like to make a closing statement.
Well, I'd just like to say that it's a very interesting experience for me, Terry, which you've exposed me to be here talking to Barbara. Barbara and I have had very little contact up to this moment, and I find it very exciting to learn from her the visions and the thinking that she represents and the Planning Commission, and I think it augurs well for the future of our city.
Thank you very much. I'd like to have the opportunity to spend more time with you in the future to find out about the lessons of the past that we can learn from as we go on and try to influence the future.
And I, in turn, want to thank both of you for being here this afternoon and sharing some of your time with our listeners. My guests have been Barbara Kaplan, who's the current director of the Philadelphia Planning Commission, and Ed Bacon, who was the director of the Planning Commission from 1949 through 1970. And I want to thank all our listeners who called with their questions. Well, that's about all we have time for this afternoon. I'll tell you what's happening.